The news that Victoria's lockdown will continue until October at least arrived with a bit of a thud today. Premier Daniel Andrews confirmed that, like New South Wales, vaccination would be the path to easing restrictions, though Andrews didn't mention picnics. He did mention regional Victoria, where cases are low and some freedoms may follow. And that's a world away from Western New South Wales, where infection has a firm hold and Indigenous communities are threatened. Low vaccination rates are a grave concern, despite the alleged priority in the rollout for Indigenous Australians. The challenge of controlling coronavirus in regional Australia is, well, particularly at the doorstep of local GPs. Frontline, both disease management and vaccination. Dr. Michael Clements is the rural chair of the Royal Australian College of GPs. He's based in Townsville. Michael, welcome.
Good evening.
Start with your patch first, Doctor. Are people coming forward to get vaccinated?
We certainly are seeing some enthusiasm brought on by, I guess, the scary statistics coming out of New South Wales and now Victoria. So we certainly have had an uptick, and that's coincided with increased eligibility for the younger people. So every single one of our vaccine doses that are scheduled to arrive have a name next to them, and we're fully booked and very busy, open 7 days a week, trying to get those vaccines out of the fridges into the arms.
Give us a sense of your workload at the moment.
Well, I'm a GP practice owner, so like many small business owners, you don't stop. So we've been doing 7 days a week for a long time now. You've got to do the work when it needs to be done, and our patients find it easier to get weekend appointments, and we can keep doing our normal business during the week, you know, the chronic disease, the mental health, the diabetes, during the week, and then we have to add this on as an extra.
Are you seeing issues around supply? Are both vaccines being demanded equally?
I think the only issue is supply, really. When we first got AstraZeneca available to general practices, we did have quite a big uptake, including me. I had AstraZeneca. And we certainly had a lot of interest and very busy clinics and lots of demand, which was wonderful. But it was almost like a door got slammed shut when the stories of the potential risk came out. And then we had some unhelpful commentary from some of the state and federal politicians that really dampened down any enthusiasm that we started off with.
Well, from your Chief Health Officer and the Premier, notably in Queensland.
Well, very sadly, I have to say, and this has been reported elsewhere as well, when our Chief Health Officer said, I don't want to see an 18-year-old die from a vaccine, so I don't recommend it below 60, all of my 60-year-olds and 65-year-olds and even the 90-year-olds heard was that this vaccine might kill you. So we actually ended up discarding stock of AstraZeneca, and we haven't ordered some for some time, and so we have very slow uptake still. Those words are very hard to retract.
You say, you know, you've got names against every shot that you have available, and if that demand was there for AstraZeneca, I mean, how much more could you be vaccinating?
Well, that's right. So we've got we've done pretty well in North Queensland. We haven't had any community spread for quite some time, and I'm actually talking from Corumba today, a remote town in the Gulf of Carpentaria, where we visit and provide support. We haven't had any cases up here either. So when AstraZeneca started, we were fully booked. Sadly, we're not at that case anymore. What we do have is quite a big group of the population who are above 60 waiting for the vaccine of their choice. Sadly, we don't know how long that's going to be.
Indigenous Australians was first to be, you know, supposed to be first cabs off the rank, or amongst those first cabs off the rank in getting vaccines. But as we've seen, Wilcannia is a prime example in Western New South Wales. Large groups of that population are unvaccinated. What's causing that, do you think?
Well, listen, I have to say it's nothing but shameful. You know, we've had plenty of time to prepare for this. You know, we've been planning for COVID vaccines ever since we first heard about the infections. Listen, it's quite shocking. 10% of the Wilcannia population are infected right now. I've got some of my members, some of the college members out in Bourke and Wilcannia and elsewhere, where they only just got access to Pfizer, so the young person's vaccine, in the last couple of weeks. Now, we know that it was around a month ago that the New South Wales Health made the decision to divert Pfizer away from the rural towns and communities in towards the city when they had that very local program. So, you know, I think all the attention's on those communities now, which is good, but it's very late. I mean, we've had plenty of time for this.
Where does that shame that you mentioned lie?
Well, we knew that they were going to be at risk. We knew that if a case got into the community, that community standards, the community living style, the way that the communities live and work is a high risk, and also they're higher risk for infection. So we should have known that, and we should have had the vaccines out there. We have very high, good exemplars in Northern Territory. There are some wonderful remote communities there that have very high vaccination rates because the state government or the territory government turned its mind to them, flew out planes with lots and lots of stock and people, and they vaccinated with community engagement. I just, you know, the fact that there are still towns that haven't had that happen needs to be addressed.
Does that, as a regional practitioner, does that example of what's going on in New South Wales, does that alarm you? I mean, it obviously could happen in areas in which you practice as well.
Yes, we've certainly, in some of the towns that I visit in my remote clinics, we only just got Pfizer in Corumba in the last few weeks, for example. AstraZeneca was the only one on offer for many people, which they elected not to take. So we've only really started the vaccine program up here. It's interesting. We've got some exemplars in Queensland. We know Longreach did really, really well very early on through good GP and community engagement. Goondiwindi is held up as a remarkable high. We've got double vaccination rates of up to 70% because of the general practice and their link with the community, including their Indigenous community. And that combined with the State Health Authority coming in did wonderful work.
Do you think city Australians understand the precariousness of health systems in regional Australia? I'm thinking of the example here in Shepparton, Victoria, where there was an outbreak and people in the hospital got sick. The staff in the hospital, hundreds of staff were furloughed. The hospitals were on the brink of not being able to operate. And that's a one-stop shop in those towns. It's a serious situation.
Oh, listen, the people in the rural and remote communities live this every day and know the risks. And I don't think the city people do understand. Just to give you an example, when I was doing my clinics here in Corumba pre-vaccine and in the early stages, Corumba literally blocked the road physically so that the tourists and busloads of people couldn't come in. We were having honest conversations with our patients saying, listen, if you catch COVID, RFDS won't be able to make it. They'll be too busy elsewhere. You will die here. And so people knew that if you accidentally caught COVID, in these remote towns, then that was it. You'd just die because of the long retrieval times. And we knew that the retrieval services had disaster plans, that they would just have to say no to some cases if they were too sick. So this is a risk that rural people are often aware of, you know, in terms of if they have a heart attack here in Corumba versus in inner city Brisbane, there are different outcomes, in the same way COVID's having a different impact.
And yet I wonder if there's another side to that in which people in rural communities have a false sense of security because of that isolation.
There's positives and negatives. So what we've seen, certainly since we've had Pfizer available here in Corumba as an example town, is that the community stepped up. Everybody talked about it. It's a bit of goading everybody. You go down to the shopping centre and everybody's asking if you've been vaccinated. So there's a community spirit to get vaccinated, which is good. But also there's a community fear when people know what it might mean for them if it got in here. Because, you know, when you've only got one corner store, you can't really shut that down. When you've only got one health clinic with two nurses, a receptionist and a visiting doctor, if that team gets isolated because of a contact exposure, there's nobody else. So these are the risks that are on their mind.
Again, as we've seen in Wilcannia, absolute food shortages of stuff happening to be trucked in. It's like a natural disaster has struck. That's the effort that's required to save the town.
Well, yes. And, you know, we've got volunteer agencies, I noticed, and charity organisations doing that. I guess my question is why didn't we already have plans for this? You know, we know that the risk of, you know, one sick COVID person turning up to a small rural emergency department will wipe out the entire health capacity for a whole region for hundreds of kilometres. You know, where was the plans? Where was the social services plans for this when it happens? I was talking to a doctor, one of our members in an Indigenous community, and the police are powerless at the moment to remove a COVID positive person from their remote community because the public health orders haven't been written that allow them to do that. So these COVID positive people are going back into their community and their houses with, you know, the police are very reluctant to go in and remove people against their will, but the public health orders aren't there yet. So, you know, we should have known this is coming, but we know it's here now, so we need to act from now.
Well, I'd say, you know, we may not have had that planning in anticipation, but the situation is now real. Is there any sense that the planning is catching up with reality?
Well, I guess being a North Queenslander, I'm not privy to the intricacies of what's going on in the middle of Sydney.
Far away.
Well, it's far enough, actually. It's good.
Yes, I might have you actually are.
it's a few days' drive. I think what I see on the outside is rhetoric about, oh, yes, we're going to relax the borders and, you know, so we're going to relax the rules once we hit 70%.
How do you feel about that?
Oh, horrified. You know, I guess, you know, as doctors, we know that there will come a time that we do, you know, the politicians will want to relax the borders and open things up. You know, we certainly respect that, and it's up to the politicians to decide at what level. But what that means for me, regardless of whether it's 70 or 80 or 90% vaccination, what that means for me is my patients are going to get sick. So I know that 10% that's left over who aren't vaccinated are at very high risk of dying. You know, each of these deaths that are occurring on these tallies in New South Wales, these are people, these will be my patients, these will be my families that I'm looking after, talking to about them dying from the fact that they didn't get vaccinated in time. We know that even with the vaccine, people will get the COVID infection and have to isolate. So, in fact, the GPs now are really talking about this post open, I guess, the post-lockdown era, and we're going to be busier than ever, and we're going to be managing COVID in the community, and we're going to be managing higher rates of death. I mean, we know New South Wales government has said, yes, we accept there will be deaths. Those deaths all have names for me, and there are patients, and so GPs will be hurting.
Michael, thank you. It's a disturbing picture that you paint, but it's good to see someone of your thinking capacity out there on the front line. Thanks for sparing some time for us.
Thank you.
Dr. Michael Clements, he's a Townsville-based GP, chair of the Royal Faculty of the Royal Australian College, chair of the Rural Faculty of the Royal Australian College of GPs.